Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. I've been noticing many things about problems that people have and the way that people are writing to me or just generally communicating with me. And I want to try and paint a picture for you of the best way forward for white survival. What actually works? What methods are there, and how do they work historically? Are there things from history that can help us with our survival right now? What is there that you can do and start doing immediately that will start taking you down a path that's going to work for you and going to work for all of us? So what I'm going to say might not sound attractive, might not sound sexy, but this is historically what works, and there's every indication that not only can this work now, but it will probably work even better now than in the past. I will try to give you some basic historical examples to show you what I'm talking about and why this will work. Because many people have got all kinds of junk ideas in their head, and you will find that what we're really up against are other groups of people who've been working for centuries. In fact, for centuries, they've been trying to figure out how to control and manipulate society. They've formed secret organizations, secret groups, they've infiltrated everything, and they are busy pulling the strings. So there are lots of things that you think are natural. You think that the world works in a certain way, and you are thinking wrong. And the reason we know this is because of many people who've tried and failed, and some have even died in the process or been jailed in the process. And by looking at certain examples, you can see what has worked, what hasn't worked. And in the process of whites being manipulated by secret forces, those whites don't realize that some of the, quote, truths that they were told was merely propaganda. It was raw, total bullshit. You were told total bullshit, total crap. And you think that that is valid. So you need to get away from the crap thinking that has been pushed into your head and focus on the real stuff that actually works. I have in the past told people, stay the hell away from prophecy, stay away from junk thinking that relates to prophecy. Now I'm going to tell you about how to get away from liberal crap and junk that has been put into your head, which you think is history, which you think is the way to behave, which you think will lead to white survival, which you think will save us. But it won't. It won't. You've just been fooled. You've been bullshitted. So at the highest level, the first thing you've got to do is get away from the shopping mall mentality. Get away from the shopping mall capitalist mentality. What you are not aware of is how long people have been working to gain power in certain specific ways and to be able to control different things. There is a system. It's a system that has been built over hundreds of years. It's taken a long time for people to create this system. You know that system as capitalism. And you think that it's just a natural thing that falls out of the sky, but it's not. It's something that's been created step by freaking step. And there are people who control different parts of that thing, and that thing can switch you off. That thing can be taken away from you. So when you are busy in the shopping mall mentality, on the one hand, you are a slave for other people. You are doing things that make your enemies, the enemies of white people, stronger. So there are certain forms of behavior you're engaging in that are making our enemies stronger. And the more you do it, the stronger they are and the more they can control you. There are other things that you are doing that will allow the enemy to control you. You will run straight to people who are our enemies and you will beg them for help. And again, they will organize you and make you do something that puts them in a position of power. So this is the shopping mall mentality, and you've got to get the hell away from it. The shopping mall mentality is out there, and you are used to, you just grab your credit card, you grab your money, you dash off to a shop, you buy something. The shopping mall mentality is tuned and set up to not support the white race, to not assist the white race in white racial survival. Money has been totally politicized. Banking was politicized hundreds of years ago. Money is politicized. Business is politicized. There is no such thing as the free market. There is only the controlled market. There is no such thing as you can go and take part in a system and that system is going to take you to the top, and in the process you are going to save your race, your nation. That system, to prevent that, is already in place. Business is not free. Money is not a free market system. These things are controlled. And if you run to that system expecting that system to save whites, you will quickly see what happens. There are lots of us in the white right. The white right's taken beatings for decades, and bit by bit, through hard struggle, we have learned that certain things don't work for us. But there are things that work for us, and the bad news is that everything is work, 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 and you've got to do some work yourself. There is no easy method. And you can look at anybody who takes a beating, even somebody as powerful as Vladimir Putin, go and look at what happens when Vladimir Putin goes against that money system. Look at what happens to him. Suddenly, in an instant, they rip everything out from under his feet. So no matter if you've got nuclear weapons and an army and you rule a big country, if you break that rule, the money system will rip everything right from under your feet in an instant. So the money system and that whole financial economic system that you were a slave for, you and I were slaves for in our lives, that system is anti-white, anti-Western, and that system does not tolerate any defense of white people. So, first things first, get out of the shopping mall mentality that you can solve all problems by taking some money, going and buying the survival methods for the European people. This does not work. The other indication that the system is controlled and the system will kick you straight in the teeth is the social media. Social media has kicked Putin in the teeth, but the social media has been kicking whites in the teeth. If you are still in the social media and you haven't been kicked in the teeth yet, it's simply that you are too soft and you haven't gone the whole way. When you go hardcore enough for your own people, you will be kicked in the teeth, you will be thrown out. The system is there, it's tried and tested and proven, millions of people have been thrown out of it. So if you are still partly in the money system, partly in the shopping mall, partly in the social media, it's because you haven't gone the whole way. And you can try and be as clever as you want to be. The system is there and the system will censor you. It will catch you out at some point in time. So don't think that you're going to totally outwit the money system, the shopping mall, or the mass media and social media systems. Those systems are attuned to hunting for enemies of the system, and they are just going to knuckle down more and more. So if you are functioning in those systems, make the most of it, but be aware that at some point you are going to get kicked out of it. This will happen to you. You're not going to be an exception. If you go into the hardcore stuff, you will be thrown out. So money and white people and white people's survival is incompatible. You will see that we are very limited in what we can do. I have watched many whites who've been trying to survive in South Africa and elsewhere. I've watched what people are doing. I've watched how people try. And everybody is mimicking the capitalist system. So everybody goes and they start their own little business and they know that they need to do some work and they know that they're going to get some money and they do it and then they find that they don't get much. They find that there's nothing much happening there. And that is because in order to get lots of money, you have to be on the inside. You have to be inside those hidden systems, inside that anti-white system. And only when you are on the inside, tested and approved by the people running that system, only then will you get money. So as a general rule, it's not totally specific, but as a very general rule that's applicable 80 to 90% of the time, in fact it's applicable 90% of the time, is that people with lots of money are in one way or another traitors, and they are associated with our enemies. People with lots of money are in some way or other traitors to their race or traitors to their nation. You just don't know how the system works. When I was running around a while back in 2018, I came across and had direct contact with Freemasons in South Africa. I learned about Freemasons and people who knew Freemasons. And I want to tell you, if you are a high-ranking Freemason, then you can get enough money and you can walk around and you can own 27 huge farms. If you're not a Freemason, you're just going to be a normal farmer battling your way forward. And if you go and you look at business, you're going to find that 90% of business is politicized and racialized, and that you will not become a billionaire, never mind a millionaire, if you have not in some way or other betrayed your own people. If you are not some kind of traitor who is feeding at the trough and working with the racial enemies of white people, you will not get wealthy. The notion that the rich and the super rich are going to save whites, you don't understand this. You are going to discover that those people are your enemies, and you will see how they will behave. There are certain things in history that are repeating themselves perfectly, and one of them is to do with the power of the rich. You will find in these times of economic hardships, which themselves have been artificially created and forced on people, you will find that money is about power, and it's about economic control, and it's about control of labor and control of resources. This is not about free market capitalism. This is not about just doing business and just having a happy time. No, there are people who have recognized that money is a form of power, that the way you control a whole population is through business, is through work, is through resources. These people have seized resources and businesses, and they will fire you, they will get rid of you when you go against the globalist entity that they are a part of. So you will go and you will beg and you will cry and you will claw your way forward to try and get some money, but in order to do that, you have to sell out your own people. And the people who move up through that system are either sellouts or they are maladjusted garbage. There is something that you could call the Alliance of Degenerates. Okay? The people with the huge amounts of money have created an alliance of degenerates and misfits. They find the people in society who are misfits, who are degenerates, who hate other people, who hate other white people, and they have promoted them and made them wealthy. And when you go into the system, you will see that the more maladjusted people are, the higher they move and the faster they go. You will see that all normal people are not represented in there. Now, another thing about the wealthy, and the wealthy are going to teach you to hate them. Let me tell you what the wealthy do. Whenever there is economic hardship, you will see that the rich get richer. And the super rich get super richer. The super rich have already made trillions of dollars just out of this junk called COVID. So when times get tough, what you will see, if you've not experienced it, you will be experiencing it, is that the rich will destroy the small. I've watched in South Africa many times when we've had economic downturns. In every economic downturn, you will see the small businesses, the medium businesses, they are the ones who will go out of business. You will see that the rich never go bankrupt. The rich just get richer. They eat the small businesses. The bigger businesses will eat the smaller businesses. They will destroy whites. They will chase you out of your job. They may even destroy your business. I know what I'm talking about. I've seen it. I've spoken to many people. In America and everywhere else, it's the same thing. When there is an economic downturn, you'll see the small and medium businesses get chewed up, they get bought out, they get taken over, and the concentration of wealth and the concentration of money and power increases, and it increases in the hands of our enemies. And those enemies are anti-white, and they will use their increased power against whites. So in economic hard times, whites are going to go more and more downhill. You will lose your job, and if you have a business, your business will go backwards, and eventually your business will be destroyed, and you will be thrown out. All whites are going to get kicked in the teeth. Lots have already experienced it. It will happen to everybody. You will see that the system is controlled by an enemy. That enemy does not want money, concentration of wealth, or power in the hands of white people. So whites are on their own. But there are methods that work, and there are methods that have worked in the past. And these methods are decentralized methods. These things work, and whites can survive anything. Now, linked to the control of money is the control of politics. See that the money controls the politics. That voting and political parties and political systems is controlled by money. So all politics in all countries, whether it's South Africa or America or Britain or anywhere, all politics is controlled by money. And you will see that nobody can move forward without money. And along come the conspirators with the money, and they will pick and choose who they are going to support. They will not only pick and choose who they will support, they will tell them which policies they are not going to support. So you will see that political parties will get the funding, but to get the funding, they have to change their tune. And you will see that this is true for all races of people in all countries, that it doesn't matter who you are. If you want money, you have to go to the devils who have the money. And the devils who have the money will tell you what policies you will change in order to get the money. So, linked to being in the shopping mall mentality is the vote fag mentality. The notion that you can solve all the problems by voting it out. That you can save the European race by voting the enemy out. By voting white genocide out. You will see that's not possible. In South Africa, it's not possible because the whites don't even make up the majority in politics. So that's already something that's been lost. And elsewhere, even in America, you'll see that somebody like the conservative Republican Party can no longer defend white people. And you should also have noticed that even if a guy is a president, they can just throw you out by rigging the election. It should become more and more obvious that money cannot solve the white race's problems, that money and business is not the answer, and that voting is not the answer either. That in fact everything's been rigged and the people have captured everything. But it's a system that's been built up over hundreds of years. So what does work? Well, what does work is the pioneering mentality. Whites have, for centuries, been pioneers. And it's about exploring, it's about living in a situation where you face all kinds of dangers. But the pioneering mentality is very natural for whites, and it does work. So, when you think that we're in a bad situation where we can't come right, no, we are not in a situation where we're going to die. We are merely in a situation where those with power have created concepts that are going to work for them. They have got a lust for power and a lust to dominate the world. So whether you call it the New World Order or communism or liberalism or whatever the hell you call this thing is controlled by people with money and power. And they use business power, and they also take over political power and ultimately military power. So they have worked for a very long time to seize power in all its forms, but their goal is world domination and a bunch of secret societies and all kinds of garbage are sitting in there. But there is a way out, and the way out is through pioneering and adapting. There is tons of technology. The white race always invents new stuff, and there is tons and tons of knowledge and technology and historical experience that has been created by whites in their various jobs. And the one thing that does work is to have the pioneering attitude. Pioneering has worked big time for whites whenever we've done it. If you study real history and you get the truth from whites who were loyal to other whites, like Hitler, like Napoleon, then you will learn certain things from them. For example, Napoleon pointed out that you cannot get excellent results when you go to people who've got power. The people who've got power will never, 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 never allow common white people to get the solutions that they want, because the rich and the powerful have got other buddies and they're part of a bigger system and they don't care about whites. And in fact, their goal is to get rid of whites, etc. Hitler went through the same thing, and Hitler actually even wrote in Mein Kampf about the fact that you must not do certain things. You must not go and look for the powerful to come and save you. If you look for the powerful to save you, if you look at striking all kinds of political deals, you will find that this does not work. Because the moment that you go there, like I've told you, they are going to give you support, but on their terms. And their terms will include things that are anti-white, etc. So if you go to them, you will find it doesn't work. But what does work, and this is actually the real basis of democracy, what does work is when the masses work together. So this is the pioneering mentality. When the masses, when the common whites work together and they don't suck up to the wealthy and the powerful and they work together as a team, as a massed team of whites, that does work. And that is unstoppable. In fact, the reason why the whole world apparently is always interested in democracy is because historically, going back to the time of the ancient Greeks and the Romans, and all other times thereafter, including the French Revolution, the rise of the Nazi Party, all of those things were done with populist white movements, populist whites operating from the ground up. And when whites operate in a populist way, and by the way, the American Revolution, that's also something. There's something else. Same thing, though in that case it was driven by a bunch of Freemasons. But at the end of the day, the reason for the obsession with democracy is not because democracy allows you to vote. It is because democracy, true democracy, militant democracy, fights its way into power. When you have enough whites who are sticking together as a group and they are willing to fight their way into power, they win. The common man is never given what he really wants, but he can always fight his way into power. And I'm going to just discuss a few short things to show you that this is what works. This works for everybody. So when whites stick together as a mass, And they don't sell out to an enemy, but they stick together and they're willing to stand together and fight together, then nothing can stop them. Nothing can stop them. And it's been done again and again and again. And this is why academics and the powerful are so petrified of masses of people. This is even why they were petrified of blacks fighting whites, because they were worried that blacks, with the numbers and the determination to fight, could crush whites. But strictly speaking, historically, whites are the ones who've proven over centuries, even over thousands of years, that whites can fight their way to democracy and to controlling their own country. It's happened again and again and again. The blacks have not even proven that they can run a country. So those fears were overstated fears. And if you look at the military stuff, you'll see the blacks wouldn't have achieved it anyway. But whites are a proven winning combination. So let's take a look at the Boers, for example. What was the best time when the Boers got what they wanted? When was the time when the Boers succeeded the most at what they wanted? The greatest success of the Boers was when the Boers were in the Cape Colony and the Boers decided that they wanted to get their own country. And they were traveling, and there were Boers who were going and doing exploration, others were farming, and together they eventually came up with an idea. And they began to think that they should form parties of pioneers, and these parties with their ox wagons and their weapons should go out to places and go and live there and start building from scratch. So the pioneering mentality is about exploration, but it doesn't always have to be physical exploration, but it is about seeking out new things and realizing that if you want something that is your own, you have to build it all yourself. So the pioneering mentality is totally different to the shopping mall mentality. In the shopping mall mentality, you run off to somebody and you pay your little bit of money and they give you something. And if they decide that they don't want to do business with you or they don't support your project, and you can walk up to them with the money and they'll basically chase you away, which is what's happened even to a guy like Putin, that's the problem with the shopping mall mentality. That's the problem with the whole setup of operating in the liberal Jewish system, is that you want to do something and they can stop you. They can cut you off. So if you want to be a pioneer, you have to realize that you have to build everything yourself. So pioneering is risk-taking and work that you must do. And whether it's build a house or build a website or whatever the hell it is, you're going to have to do it. And the pioneering mentality is a whole different thing. So first and foremost, in the pioneering mentality is self-sufficiency and learn to do things yourself. Go out there and start building. Now, in the case of the Boer republics, they started exploring, they formed groups, they went to occupy places, they started building it up, and the Boers actually created at least 6 Boer republics, but there may have even been more than that. Some of them failed, and a few of them survived and went on to do great things. But that is the nature of pioneering. Now, in those days, the technology of the time, the best technology of the time, was that if you want to do transport, you've got to use an ox wagon. If you want to fight and defend yourself, you have to use a musket. But that was the best technology of the time. If you wanted to move fast, you climbed on a horse and you rode a horse. So those were the best things that the technology of that time allowed. The Boers did not go and take spears and fight with spears. They used the best technology of their time. And we can use the best technology of our time. You must use the best that we have. And you must learn technology and you must understand things and learn to do things yourself. And in the case of those Boers, they were not recognized as a nation, but they gathered together as groups and teams. They brought together their assets. They brought together their skills. They worked as a group. They worked as a team. And then they chose leaders. And they went and engaged in all kinds of things, including military campaigns. So when the Boers went and settled in Natal, and the Zulus came and slaughtered them, and the Boers were absolutely outraged by this, and they set up the new group that was going to go back and fight the Zulus, they went, and what did they do? They gathered men and women together, they gathered people with weapons together. They went and bought some of the best weaponry of their time. They even bought one or two small cannons. So now it was a gathering of whites, and they got all their bits and pieces together. They worked out who was going to be their leader, how they were going to do this, and they went as a group, and eventually they went and they tackled the blacks. And they defeated them at Blood River. And they went on to actually later even overthrow the Zulus and destroy the one Zulu king and replace him with another Zulu king. All of those things that they did not do it by asking the British government for permission. In fact, they ignored the British. They went and did their own thing using their own resources, using their own skills, risking their own lives. And that resulted in the greatest positive outcome for them. They worked as a team, they worked as a group, they self-funded themselves, and in the end, they ended up even creating their own countries, the Free State and the Transvaal. If you think that things are different today, they are not different today. If you dig into those times, you will see that the British tried to stop them, the British tried to control them, they were spies, and you will see that all the same problems that we face today were faced by the Boers. You will find that this happened to any whites who went anywhere, who engaged in any kind of adventures. The Americans, the white Americans, as they colonized the West, as they moved in their wagons, as they went and fought the Indians, as they went and built their farms, as they went and set up their towns and villages, you will see the same old thing repeating itself over there. Napoleon made it clear that if you go to the powerful, you will never get the outcome that you want. So, all whites everywhere need to realize that you will not get the outcome that you want. You will not get white survival. You will not get the values and the systems that we want. You have to go and take part in things yourself. All of us have to do things ourselves. So let's consider, how did you live your life? How did you and I live our lives? We were just workers. We went and we slaved away for some ungrateful bag of shit, possibly even somebody from outside the country who had the correct connections. But in our work and the things that we did, even when we were employed, we were professional people. We did things to a high standard, and we knew that we each had a job. I was a computer programmer. You may have been something else, an accountant, a draftsman, a fitter and turner, an engineer, a policeman. Whatever you were, you had a job and you were trained in that job and you learned to do that job well. And depending on your job, you also may have had the opportunity to use your own initiative, or you were expected to use your own initiative to do the job better. If you faced a problem, your boss would not have accepted certain weak excuses. Certain weak excuses which are totally acceptable today in the failing state of the new South Africa. Excuses and things which are acceptable to others, we were not allowed to have those excuses. If you really look at whites and you really study our history, which I have done, you will find that white people have got certain levels of proficiency and certain professionalism. And it doesn't matter what we did, we always had our own standards and we always insisted on high standards and knowing how to do something properly. If you go deeper into like the Romans, which is a topic I want to deal with in depth, you will find that the Romans not only could do normal work, but the Roman army was a very fascinating army. It was in all likelihood one of the greatest armies that ever existed. But you will find an interesting thing in there, in that you had men of all types in that army. It was not an army that was composed of just the macho men. No, it was an army that included high levels of skills, very high levels of skills. The Roman army had men of all kinds of technical skills, including men who could make things and fix things. And when it came to engineering and technical stuff, they were unmatched in the history of the world. There is probably no army that was ever gathered together that had the intelligence of the Roman army. And the success of the Roman army, for hundreds of years, it was able to defeat and conquer everybody it came across, including other whites who themselves were very skilled and very energetic and intelligent. So the Roman system was a system that works, but it was a system based on professionalism and whites using all their skills to the maximum. So we today can do exactly the same thing. Men and women can organize and do things and look at your resources, your skills, increase your skills, look at what you can do and get on with it. We are in a time where all the mayhem that is around us has been created by a bunch of filthy, super rich rats who have got insane desires for world power. And they want to rule everybody. They want to rule all the whites, all the blacks, all the Asians. They want to rule the whole world, and they want everybody to grovel in front of them. And that is the result of the demented dreams of these weak, pathetic scum with money coming out of their ears. But they did manage to gather money, and it took them hundreds of years to sneakily put this filthy, disgusting, anti-white system together, where whites are just other garbage to be ruled and kicked around as they see fit, and maybe even be killed as they see fit. But we're not going to die. Maybe the others will die. The others will be ruled like dogs. We are the creators of many civilizations, many empires. And in actual fact, in a very thorough study of history, in a very interesting book, there was somebody who studied all of the technology that's ever been invented. Even this liberal had to conclude that 97% of all technology and science that's ever been invented in all of the history of all of the world, 97% of that was invented by European people in the last 1,000 or so years. And out of the other remaining 3%, 2% of the remaining 3% was invented by white people in pre-Christian times. In other words, in Roman and Greek times. So in total, white people have invented 99% of all science and technology that has been invented in the history of the world. Let me repeat that. Between ancient whites and modern whites, 99% of all science and all technology in the history of the earth has been invented by European people. We European people are not a slave-like, groveling bunch of dogs. We can create anything we want. If the super rich want to rule the blacks, make them grovel like dogs, they want to rule the Asians, make them grovel like dogs, so be it. But the one group they're not going to rule is us. We are not going to be anybody's slave. We've never been, and we are not going to start now. So let me just go through the various things. It's not going to help to engage in politics outside of our race, outside of our group. All of those kinds of notions are junk notions. They don't work. The things that work, the natural thing in nature that works, is for herd behavior, group defense, stick together. And the next thing is, don't go begging for all kinds of things. If you want to survive, the best method of surviving is to have no rules. Because rules can be put in place that make it impossible for us to survive. So for survival purposes, we need maximum flexibility, maximum tactical and strategic flexibility. So that if we face this threat, that we can counter it with something else. And you get this the best when we function as groups of people working together at the same level. In the same way that the Boers went out, explored, conquered, etc. And what the Boers did in recent times is merely a reflection of what whites used to do for tens of thousands of years. Whites used to wander around, live in various places, hunt various animals, explore, fight, create societies, etc. This has been going on for tens of thousands of years. It's been in our blood, it's been in our DNA, and it's there, and it's a natural part of us. And this brings me to the final point, which is be yourself. Stop trying to be a Jew. Stop trying to be a black. Be what you are. Be what you are comfortable with. Think and act and work in a way that you feel is natural for you. You will do far better as an individual, and we will do far better as a group, if each person is true to himself or herself. Follow your own mind. Think and react and assess risks and challenges and threats the best that you can. Constantly be learning. Constantly improve your skills. Constantly focus on your little area that you are responsible for and do it to the best of your ability. learn constantly, improve your skills constantly, and interact with others in the group constantly. Constantly spread information, constantly get information. And don't be concerned about the wealthy and the powerful who want to destroy us. Once we function as a self-contained group and the group grows stronger, there is nothing they will be able to do that can destroy us. There is nothing they'll be able to do. In the same way that the Boers went and faced a black army that was sent by a king of a black tribe, and that army, which was organized by that tribe and came to fight them, and they ended up beating it. The same thing has repeated itself over and over again on even grander scales everywhere else, all across North America, in Europe, in Asia. In ancient times, whites went and did these things. Whites have conquered and crushed enemies all the time. But the starting point is that you must link up with your local group, and the local group must organize and fight and struggle forward as a group. Plus, we have the ability to share knowledge and experience across continents, across the world. Nobody's coming to save us. We must save ourselves. Nobody cares for us. We must care for ourselves. And in many ways, we've done bad things. We've grown very soft. We've delegated things that we should not have delegated. A good example of a bad delegation is the notion of mercenaries. Machiavelli, one of the great thinkers at the beginning of the Renaissance, who wrote a lot of truths that Jews hate. He wrote many truthful things. Machiavelli made a very interesting case for armies. He said that it's a bad idea to hire mercenaries to defend you, because history has shown that if you hire mercenaries, that the mercenaries can save you, and the mercenaries can then enslave you and control you. That in actual fact, the best method for defense, and what Machiavelli suggested is what the entire world works on nowadays, is to rather raise your own army from your own people. The only army that you can trust is your army from your own people. In other words, you must learn to fight your battles yourself. If you go and pay somebody else to fight your battles for you, they will have the power of life and death over you. So they may save you, but then they'll enslave you and control you, and you won't be able to escape. So there are many things that we've done that are very bad. And that is why you must return to the pioneer spirit. You must build your own house, do your own work, fight your own battles. If you do those things, you will be free. And if you ever delegate those tasks, you're actually setting yourself up for destruction. Look at us whites in Africa. We didn't do our own work. We became soft and we didn't want to do physical labor. So what did we do? We delegated it to blacks. Now the blacks control us. We delegated our own labor, and now it's biting us in the ass, and it's even bringing us to the edge of destruction. Nobody will care for you like you will for yourself. Nobody will care for your family like you will for your family, and they will for you. These are the mechanisms that really work. And everything that is outside of our group and outside of our family, ignore it. They are not our children. They are not our family. They are competitors. And if they get the chance to conquer us and destroy us, they will. And they have shown it. They've shown it clearly. Everywhere. Not just in South Africa, but everywhere. So do your bit of work. Take your bit of responsibility. Take pride in what you do. No, you won't become a millionaire. No, you won't become a billionaire. Teach yourself all the skills that you need. Take part in the group. Add value to the group. Find a place for yourself. You will see there is lots of place for anybody who's willing to work. Contribute to the group. Use your skills. Use your brains for the group benefit. And move away from this corporate world where everything is going to be given to you by somebody else. Self-sufficiency is a long-standing thing that European people have built up. We should trade among ourselves, do things among ourselves, etc. But keep everything within our group. On odd occasions, rare occasions, there will be ways to do bigger things with specific alliances with others. But that's a topic for another day. Don't feel bad if you look at the little bit of work that you're doing and you think that this is pathetic. Remember that as a group, we have been responsible for building many great nations, very functional nations. And in the past, in our work, we were just one brick in the wall. But there are many bricks that make up that wall. We are one cog in something bigger. But make sure that your little piece, that you do your piece well and thoroughly to the best of your ability, like the way that you've lived your life. And if all of us do that, and we all contribute in the ways that we physically can, you will see the end result of it. Also, you are going to learn socialism. You've been lied to and told about this thing called capitalism and free market. All of those things were packs of lies. At the end of the day, all you have is socialism, is what the group owns and what the group can share among each other. That's all we have. When you deal with other groups outside of your species, you are going to find all kinds of problems. Among the problems you're going to find is that loyalty is the first thing that goes out the window. That when you are in need of certain things, that somebody else has dumped you. Exactly the stuff that's just happened to Putin. Exactly the stuff that happened to any other leader in the past who tried to go against the secret system. You will suddenly find that things that you absolutely need to rely on are no longer available to you. How are you going to survive then? That is why you have to stick within our system and build the loyalty and the trust and the things that will be there when we need them, when we are in deep trouble and we need them badly. Do your own thing. Look at how whites have fought back, the white right has fought back on the internet. All of us were on the social media. Almost all of us got banned. All of us were on YouTube, and almost all of us were thrown off YouTube, except for a handful who play a soft game. But the soft game in the end is a waste of time as well. We will return to that when we discuss the Overton window. To get what we want, we need to play the hard game, and it means that we've got to be able to handle all kinds of difficult situations. And the first thing that goes out the window is loyalty and trust. And that only happens when you start linking up. You will find that it always happens when you link up with diversity and politics and alliances outside of your group. Those things will turn into the weakest link in the chain. If you want to keep the chain strong, everything must be in our group, it must be among our people, and we stick together. That works. Finally, use your creativity. You were a professional in whatever you did. You dealt in whatever part of life you dealt with, and you were able to deal with competition and threats that came from other organizations or companies or whatever that were strong and professional and well-funded. We can do the same. Our biggest weakness is our lack of capital, but we have got skills and we have got numbers. And with those things, with skills, numbers, and creativity and using your savvy, you can take on anybody. You can take on anybody, including the richest of the rich, the most powerful politicians, the largest numbers of people, and you can even take on whole armies of enemies. And if you do those things, you can face anything. We did it in the past with small groups going out, colonizing, exploring, surviving, building from scratch. We can do all those things nowadays. There is no threat that we face today that is in any way worse or more dangerous than threats we faced in the past. A lot of the threats you think you face are nothing more than ghosts in your mind, stuff that has come to you from junk thinking, poisonous Jewish garbage like the end times and all that kind of crap. That's just garbage thinking. It's just a lot of junk, has no basis in reality. Get that crap out of your head. I just want to show you some photo footage of the greatest monument in South Africa for whites. If you want the greatest monument that was built for whites by whites, and it stands to this day, and even though blacks at various times have said that this thing must come down, I think a lot of pressure was put on them to stay the fuck away from this thing, because if they touch this monument, then there's going to be a racial war. So what you're looking at is a building. In this photo, you're looking at a building over here. This is known in South Africa simply as the monument, the monument. That's all it's known as. But it's sitting on a hill in Pretoria. This thing was built and inaugurated in 1949. The apartheid government came into power in 1948. And the whole purpose of apartheid was white unity, white ownership of South Africa. And so you can see massive crowds here. But the truth of the matter is that this monument is really a tribute to the Boers, or the people who came to be known as the Boers. This is a tribute to the pioneers who colonized South Africa. And what makes some of South African history rather difficult to understand is that the same people that you know as the Boers actually undergo name changes. So when they are in pioneering mode, they are known as the Voortrekkers. And Voortrekkers is spelt with a V, but it's pronounced as an F. So the Voortrekkers are the pioneers. These are the original Boers who left the British colony, the Cape Colony, and started going into black territories and starting to colonize. So this is the greatest monument to whites, and it is a monument to the Voortrekkers. But the Voortrekkers were almost exclusively Dutch-German people who later created the Boer colonies, the Boer republics, and who fought against the British twice. So this is their monument. And I just want to take you through some photos of the monument. It's still there to this day, and it's the only thing of its kind. It's maybe the closest thing, it's maybe the closest thing to a pyramid in South Africa. Those of you who know that Europeans are responsible for Egyptian civilization and that pyramids are not really black, but were probably designed and organized by whites. Well, here is the closest thing to a South African pyramid. There are other places in South Africa where there are monuments to the voortrekkers, but this is the biggest one of all. It's on a hill outside the capital city of Pretoria, and it stands there to this day, and the blacks don't touch this thing, because if they do, the Boers are going to kick their asses. Inside the monument is this marble stone, and on the 16th of December every year, the sun shines through a hole in the top of this building, and it shines on this stone, and you can actually see the sun shining there. And on there it says Ons vir jou Suid-Afrika, which is translated as We for you South Africa. In other words, so Ons vir jou Suid-Afrika, that is highly patriotic. But if you look at who are the voortrekkers were just these small groups of whites, sometimes dozens, sometimes hundreds, never more than 1,000 or so. They were small groups of whites who went out into Africa away from the British, and they went among the blacks and they took their chances. They risked their lives. So these are whites who went and risked their lives. And these photos that you see here are photos that I took some years ago when I was at the monument. So here you can see a white woman with her two children. And that's how the white women dressed in those days. They dressed like that to protect their skin from the sun, the African sun, because it damages their skin. And it can cause cancer. We know that these days. This is inside the monument, and you can see that it's marble and it's got all these lovely carvings. So, you know, this is like the mythology of the founding of the whites, except that it's based on real history. And so you can see here things like blacks killing whites, etc. And this is the monument in the evening. So in the evening, there you can see, there's that same statue that we saw earlier of the mother with her two children, the boy and the girl, and you can see this is what it looks like at night. Very lovely thing. There are other things around it as well, but let me show you some more things about the monument. So this is the monument from a distance, and here you can see more of the carvings that they put up of the wagons and the men as they're trying to pull the wagons. So, you know, hundreds of years ago, this was the best technology the whites had, and they used these wagons to travel long distances. They traveled thousands of kilometers, and they even traveled right over mountains. They traveled over hectic mountains as well with these wagons. And I've been to some of the places where they've traveled. I must tell you, it's amazing. It's amazing the difficult terrain that they covered with those wagons. This is inside the monument, and that thing where you saw Ons vir jou South Africa, that is on top of this thing here in the middle. Those flags that you see are flags of different Boer republics that were founded. And you see here in the top, this is where the sun shines through. So there's also like a whole solar thing when they built this thing that was built into this. There is definitely European-related stuff from the past in the building of this monument when they created it. And here is an Afrikaans diagram of the monument, because there you can see in this diagram the sun comes through from the top and it shines down on there. Plus you can go to the next level floor and look down on it. And there are still other floors that you can climb up to get to the very top, etc. So they planned it in 1931. So there's another photo of it from afar. And you can see all the trees around it on the hill. And then around it, it's got like a wall, and the wall is made of these wagons. You can see these wagons that are inlaid all around it. And there's a garden around it. Here is the monument from another angle, and here you can see a white man with his musket. That is how they dressed and how they were armed. Hundreds of years ago, these are the people who were the explorers and the original colonizers and who had to face the blacks. This is probably a carving representing the time when, I think it's Piet Retief, I think when Piet Retief met and made an agreement with the Zulu king, and the Zulu king shortly thereafter took Piet Retief and all his guys and had them all killed. So the black signs an agreement, and then a short while afterwards he grabs all these white men and kills them all. This is the reason for the Battle of Blood River. So the Boers are very outraged that their man went and signed this agreement, and then the black treachery. But the black could see the whites are coming, and the black probably realized he needs to kill the whites, because if he doesn't kill the whites are going to grow stronger, and eventually they will be destroying him. Anyhow, so all this peace came to nothing. It was a waste of time. And later on, the Boers, in their vengeance for the murder of Retief and his men, the Boers came and they waged war against the Zulus, and they deposed this same Zulu king. And this Zulu king was killed, I think he was killed by other Zulus. And the Boers actually did what Americans would call regime change. The vengeful Boers came and basically initiated what would be called regime change in the Zulu kingdom of that time. So there's that same picture of the mother with her two children, but you can see other animals here. And this is the view from inside looking down. This is probably from the very top. Here's another shot of one of these Voortrekker men on the corner of the monument. Here is the monument from another angle, from looking up from the bottom. You can see a oxen. And then some wagons. More of the wagons that are on that wall that surround the monument. Another sort of image of the monument. It's not quite a photo. This is also inside the monument, and the sun's going to shine down through here. Another angle of the monument. Here you're looking up, and there you can see the hole through which the sun's going to shine. There's a lovely photo of the monument. And there you can see the wall with the wagons around it. So this is a wonderful, wonderful structure, almost a religious structure. And I'm serious if I say a religious structure that it lies at the heart of the Boers. The Boers, I'm telling you, if the blacks touch this thing, the Boers will go and shoot them. They won't muck around. Even now. Also again on the inside. Let's just see if there's something else. Here is a proper reconstruction of a wagon from the past. So this is the closest to let's say a pickup truck. From, you know, 200 years and more ago, 200, 300 years ago, this is the only technology the whites had, and this is what they used to go and explore, carry all their belongings with, and go and colonize and build and face death if need be. And this is a view from the monument itself looking into Pretoria. So you can see some of these buildings. And when you're inside Pretoria, you see this monument on the hill. It's very lovely. So this is a white monument to whites, specifically the Boers, but all whites look up to this thing. It is a white creation for whites, commemorating whites. This is something very cool. This is actually one of my favorite things. This is down in the basement. This guy is Pretorius. This is Pretorius, who was the commander of the Boers who went and fought the Battle of Blood River and who avenged the death of Retief. So that is Pretorius. And here what you're looking at is the most modern technology of the time. So how did they fight? They didn't fight the blacks with spears. They used the best weaponry that they could afford at the time. And they bought two little cannons. And this is one of the two cannons. They bought these two little cannons that went with them. And these two little cannons shot blacks. You are looking at a tiny little weapon of white mass destruction from the 1830s. You are looking at a weapon that killed Zulus. This weapon killed Zulus. This is also inside as you walk around it. This is going out to one of the balconies. You can see very nicely designed, hey? Just something else that's a little bit later, which we'll return to later. This is Paul Kruger. He was later the president of the biggest of the Boer republics. And he was the guy who was the president at the time that they discovered gold in South Africa. And he said that the discovery of gold, instead of being something to rejoice over, was something that they should have wept over, because that resulted in the Jews and the British coming and crushing them. But that's a topic for another day. we'll get back to that. So let's take a look at pioneers and just go over some of the things, some of the problems that pioneers face and the hardship of a pioneer, because a pioneer doesn't get to see much benefit of what he's doing, because the pioneer is right at the beginning of the whole thing, and we are modern pioneers. But in the decades and centuries ahead, academics will be writing lots of books, in whatever form books happen to take in the future. But they'll be writing books and doing analyses and writing PhDs, and they will be looking at the age of the internet and how the age of the internet changed the whole world. And how the age of the internet ushered in great wars. It ushered in great wars, huge slaughter, as race wars raged across the Western world. Blacks were annihilated, Jews fled for their lives, etc., etc. Those things have not happened yet, but when they write the history of our time and what comes after your and my life, there will be all kinds of exciting things that they will be writing about, and they will trace those things back to the internet. Don't underestimate the power of the internet. The internet has just changed the world, and the internet has changed everything, and we, in the 2020s, are sitting in the middle of it. But the internet started in the 1990s, and from then to now, we've already seen the movements that have taken place. We've seen the racial awareness that came out of nowhere. We've moved from a time where white Americans used to believe every single word that came out of their mass media. That is how Americans were when I first contacted Americans in the early 1990s. They believed everything that came through radio and TV. Well, now huge numbers of them don't believe that anymore, because they realize that indeed there were all sorts of other things around, and many of them are now racialized and awakened to the reality. But the internet is by no means have we seen the last of the internet. The internet war still rages on, and the internet war will change civilization. Western civilization, it has changed the world, but its full effects on civilization have not yet been seen. And some of us, maybe you, maybe me, will be dead when the consequences of the internet is still moving through society. So trust me, in the future, in a century or whenever in the future, when they write the history of our time, they will write about websites and people like Dr. William Pierce. They'll talk about William Pierce and what he did on the internet and the things he kicked off. They'll talk about all of us. They'll talk about all these websites, videos, stuff like that British guy who did The Greatest Story Never Told, Evalian, Alex Linder, Tan Staffel, Occidental Descent, Renegade Tribune, all these different websites, Kevin Strom, National Vanguard. They will write about all these different things that were kicked off. And they will analyze. They'll sit back, they'll have the data, they'll have data that we don't have today, but they will have the more refined data, they will have the things that governments, the secrets that governments finally disclosed, all the things that were declassified long after you and I are dead, and they will then come and they will write the history of our time. And they'll talk about all these little outfits, people starting websites, doing things. this person did this, that person did that, that group of people came and engaged in this. And they will talk about all these things and the knock-on effects of these things. I think a guy like Dr. William Pierce will feature very prominently in the history in the time to come. But let's take a bit of a look at other pioneers. So, in this image that I chucked together, here are some other pioneers. On the top right, there are some white Americans recreating pioneers in Utah. So these people are probably reenactors of some kind, and they are busy recreating the pioneer days of white Americans, which are actually very similar to the pioneer days of the whites in southern Africa, especially the Boers. Similar technology, similar times, faced the same threats, went out in their ox wagons and went and faced the local natives in North America, the Indians, the Red Indians, in South Africa, the blacks. In South Africa and Southern Africa and other parts of Africa, the blacks. So there on the bottom right is the monument from South Africa at night in Pretoria, the monument. Monument to the fur trackers, the Boer pioneers. That's really what the fur trackers are. And then there near the top, back on the top, the Boer woman with her two children. But there are other pioneers. Our civilization, our people, our race, we've got lots and lots of pioneers. And we've got lots of pioneers going back tens of thousands of years, the Aryans, all those other pioneers that came to Europe, and the mixing of the different people that came to form the European people as we know them. We've got pioneers in military stuff, we've got pioneers in science. I've not even touched on the pioneers in science, in physics, in astronomy, in mathematics, in engineering. These are very important topics, but we'll touch on them another day. But in more recent times, we've had other kinds of pioneers. We've had other pioneers who are also racial, also looking for a new way of life, also thinking new thoughts. So on the top left, we've got Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler, the man who is responsible for the greatest awakening of the European people in 2000 years. Adolf Hitler taking us down a whole new path back to Rome, back to the Aryans, back to the pagans, back to nature. So Hitler is a pioneer. He's a pioneer who pioneered, did what he could until his pioneering effort. Let's remember, Hitler's pioneering effort was the most monumental pioneering effort since the Romans, man. So his pioneering effort was not a minor success, it was an insanely awesome success, but it had to be crushed by all the old garbage who want to keep the old garbage system alive. So the pioneer faces what he can face, but he might have to die. And in Hitler's case, he died. And his work was smashed, but he was a pioneer. He laid the foundations. He did amazing things. Another pioneer in America, bottom left, the late great George Lincoln Rockwell. Rockwell is a particular kind of pioneer. He is much more like the small-time pioneers, the Boers, those guys in Utah and in other parts of America. George Lincoln Rockwell, the pioneer who's got almost nothing. He's got virtually nothing. He's got to function with a shoestring budget in the face of insane odds. And George Lincoln Rockwell is busy pioneering. And he knows, George Lincoln Rockwell knows, just like Hitler knew, by the way, George Lincoln Rockwell knows he can die. that his pioneering could result in his death. I did a video about Hitler and the 44 times they tried to kill Hitler, and the fact that Hitler could have been killed at any time. There were many, many, many attempts to kill Hitler. Hitler knew he was risking his life, but he believed what he believed, and he was absolutely determined to continue, and his work came to wonderful fruition. And even in its demise, it was still awesome. Even its downgoing, and here I'm quoting Nietzsche, we'll get to Nietzsche. Even in his downgoing itself was magnificent. It proved the strength of what he'd created. Again, these are topics to be revisited. That when you create something, everything that you create has to be able to withstand enemy attacks. That is what all pioneers face. Pioneers live on the edge. Hitler lived on the edge. Rockwell lived on the edge. The Boers, the Americans in North America, in Canada, in South America, everywhere where whites went and colonized, the pioneers face the possibility of death. They are never many in number. In fact, there are quotes from Hitler and others where once Hitler comes to power, they talk about how easy it is to be a National Socialist in the 1930s. Because to be a National Socialist in the 1920s, now that was tough. In the 1920s, they had no money. In the 1920s, they faced all kinds of nasty things, including threats to their lives. They literally had to struggle from hand to mouth, and they had very little going for them in the 1920s. Some of them even died. But the pioneers of the 1920s made it, and then finally they won, and then everybody was on their side. People were then voting for them, joining them, being on their side. But before that, for 14 years, they had struggled from hand to mouth through great difficulty to get there, at a time when most people just ignored them. George Lincoln Rockwell is the father of National Socialism in America. George Lincoln Rockwell is really the father of the right wing in America and the racial side of white America. But he had virtually nothing. And Rockwell at his peak had maybe 30 guys working with him. And they lived in a house and they had very little going for them. But Rockwell believed firmly in what he believed. And Rockwell knew he could die. And even when he asked to have the license for a firearm to defend himself with, he was denied that. And they came and Jews set out to kill him. And they failed the first time, but they succeeded the second time. Rockwell is a pioneer. Without Rockwell, there wouldn't have been Tom Metzger, David Duke, Dr. William Pierce. There wouldn't have been most of the white right that existed. It would have been stuck with the John Birch Society, which would never talk about Jews, which would never go into the deeper things. So pioneers face extreme danger, and pioneers have to struggle forward when victory is uncertain. This is very important. The pioneers are the ones who carry on when victory is uncertain, when nobody knows whether we can succeed. Like the Voortrekkers, like the American pioneers, you can go and you can trek to the place where you want to settle, but the Indians or the blacks could come and wipe out your settlement, kill you, kill your wife, kill your children. All of you are dead. That is what a pioneer faces. Pioneers get murdered. Pioneers get ambushed. Pioneers fight desperate battles for their existence. And pioneers can get wiped out. But that's all part and parcel of it. That is all part and parcel of the risk. In modern times, pioneers don't get killed as easily, but you can still do jail time. You can do court time, jail time. Jews will drive you out of your job. You can suffer massive financial harm. You can lose your career. All kinds of things can go wrong with you, man. You will lose your income. You will be disgraced. You'll be slandered in the media. That's what will happen to a modern pioneer. At the time that I record this, Mr. Bond, the young white guy in his 30s who's a rapper in Austria, Mr. Bond just got a 10-year jail sentence. 10-year jail sentence. And I think his brother got a 4-year jail sentence for running a, quote, anti-Semitic website. And there are lots of others that are sitting in jail, some of them on death row. Dylan Roof, Robert Bowers, John Ernest, Matt Hale. The list goes on and on and on. There are people sitting in jail in Britain, lots of people in jail in Germany, whites in jail everywhere, whites who are in jail, whites who've been in jail. But this is the price that you pay as a pioneer. None of those pioneers, if you look into history, the Boers, the Americans, what did they achieve? They went and created a little settlement. Maybe they built a farm for themselves and they started farming. They had a homestead. They worked as a group. They managed to feed themselves. They managed to fend off the Indians or the blacks. That is all that a pioneer gets. The pioneers don't become billionaires. The pioneers don't get to see the cities or the aircraft or all the huge things that come later. But if the pioneers don't go and do those things, then there's nothing for the others who come afterwards to build on. It's the pioneers who have to travel through the bush, face the snakes, or in the case of Rockwell and Hitler, dodge the freaking bullets that are coming at them as their enemies are trying to kill them. This is the life of a pioneer. Pioneer doesn't get to be a billionaire. He doesn't get to become the president and jump on a spaceship or something like that. The pioneer's got a pretty miserable life. But the pioneer is the person who lays the foundation. And take that quote from Rockwell, where he talks about revolution, that quote that you see in front of you, where he says, "Revolution is a spectator sport. The majority will sit in the stands and watch the factions fight. At the end, they will choose sides with the team that is winning." In other words, Rockwell knew. He knew he's got to go, he's got to face the bullets, literally. He's got to go and do his thing. He might or might not live. And if he fails, then the majority of those white spectators will choose the other side. That he will have tried his best, given his life, in fact. Tried his best, given his life, given his one and only life. And then the people bugger off and join the other side. They go and they stick with the Jews, for example. He knew the odds. He knew the odds. Just like Hitler did. Just like all the others did. But he believed firmly in what he believed in. He knew the importance of what he was doing. He had total conviction in what he was doing. And he was willing to risk everything. And that is the way we should look at this thing. We must continue in this way forward. This is the only way. And whites have pioneered right throughout their existence. Whether it's the Aryans or the Scythians, same people, who went out into the steppes and later even conquered and occupied India, whether it's the Vikings, whether it's any of our people. Consider the whites who created the civilization in Egypt. They didn't get to see the pyramids. They didn't know that there were going to be pyramids. But they laid the foundations for the civilization that would, thousands of years later, build those things. What of the original Romans, the original Greeks, the original Celts? None of them saw what was coming. None of them could even conceive what was coming. The original Romans could never have conceived the size that Rome would become. Just as the original Americans who went to America could never have conceived what America would become one day. How powerful it would be, how huge its population would be, its magnificent strength that it would have, its science would be completely beyond their comprehension. They would not even be able to conceive of things like submarines, aircraft, rockets, cruise missiles, probes to other planets. They wouldn't have even been able to conceive of these things. They wouldn't even have been able to conceive of ships made out of iron that could float on the water. They wouldn't have even thought of these things. But if it wasn't for them going there, facing the Indians, fighting the Indians, none of these things would ever have happened. As a computer programmer, I can tell you that you've not seen the last of the nerds, okay? The computer nerds have been laying all kinds of foundations for incredible robotics, the likes of which you cannot imagine. Robotics and software with a sophistication that will blow you away. And the white nerds have done this, and it's not reached its full outcome yet. It will change the world. The world is already changing. Drones are probably the most visible portion of that, but much more insane things are coming. Probably an age of super robotics is what's coming, where every device will be intelligent and every device will be able to do things. And when that happens, oh boy, some of our racial enemies are going to see their asses. The splendor of what we can create will really shock people. The blacks are in for some nasty, nasty surprises, I tell you. They are messing with the wrong people. So just be aware that as we are working on people's minds, and times are changing, and we're having an effect on people, that this is just the beginning. And the harder we work and the more dedicated we are, the bigger the impact will be that we're going to have, the sooner that impact will hit home. Forget about voting your way out of things. Forget about simple, small, mediocre solutions. Just carry on with the racial work that we're doing. Stay true to the racial work, the global unity, the sticking together of our people, the building of unity, the building of power, etc. These things will probably transform Western civilization completely so that we can get to the new Rome. So that we can get to the kind of thing that Adolf Hitler was building. We need to get back there and go past the point where he was. We need to solve the problems that brought him down, that brought the others down. So just carry on doing things you might not be able to see or conceive of where it's going to lead to. And you are demoralized because of Jews, because of liberals, who are anyway waging a deliberate campaign of the demoralization of the white right. We will come back to that when we look at spies. I will show you that Jews know Jews know what it is that we are preparing for, and Jews know how to destroy it. They know much more than you realize, but it's because of various errors in the current system, all of which can be solved. And that is what pioneering is all about. The pioneers have to learn how to take those wagons long distances, how to get them over the mountains, how to get them through dense forests, how to travel across semi-deserts, how to survive under this condition and under that condition. They have to solve problems. All pioneers have to solve problems, and they have to solve those problems with very little. That is exactly where we are today, and we must just carry on, because out of this will come incredible things. One of the reasons why I'm so determined is because I have had more than 20 years of doing things on the internet and among the social media and with other whites, and I have seen what you start with and where you end up. I've seen it. I've gone through various iterations, and I've seen the impact that comes from it. So I don't have any doubt that there's going to be impact from what I am doing. I have no doubt about that. My problem is trying to convince you that you can also have an impact, and we are multipliers as we help each other to multiply our efforts. And I want to warn you that in my 20 plus years in doing this kind of stuff, I've seen how people ebb and flow. That when you are dealing with people, that people go through various stages. There are those who initially want nothing to do with you, and they are absolutely afraid, and they're absolutely sitting on the sidelines, and they can't believe that what you're doing has any value, and they can't believe that you're even going to survive, and they can't even believe that anyone's going to listen. And then when they see that, my goodness, you've carried on for a couple of years, and look, there are quite a lot of people that are listening to you, and it's actually becoming more exciting and better things are coming out of it, then after a time, they are amazed that you are still surviving, and they actually start seeing that you are gaining momentum. And then they want in. Then they want in. And lots of whites who are still in the shopping mall mentality and who have got all kinds of messed up views of capitalism, instant wealth, instant fame, when they see that you've been slogging away for years and years at something that they don't think can work, and then they see, good God, this stuff is actually working and more people are coming in and the end results are actually better and better, then all of a sudden they want in. These are the people you could call the easy, greedy people. The easy, greedy people. They weren't going to take a risk. They are the kind of people, like George Lincoln Rockwell says, they are sitting in the sidelines watching you fight your desperate battle, and they don't believe that you can survive. So they watch in amazement that you actually manage to survive. And then after a while, they start getting greedy. They say, good God, you know, this guy, he's surviving against all the odds. You know, let me jump in. I can quickly grab that thing. I can do better. I got more money. I can dive in and I can beat him to the finishing post, and then I'll be number one. And then the easy, greedy dive into the thing. I've seen this many times. So then the easy, greedy dive into it, and they try to steal it right from under you, believing that it's easy, that you, the pioneer who've slogged away, that finally he can pip you at the, he can beat you at the finishing post, okay? So he comes and tries to steal everything from under you, but most of the time he doesn't realize how tough this really is, and you get the easy greedy diving in on the white right, and they try to pip you at the post, and then they hit a headwind, And then you see how 99.9% of them dash away and they run away and they flee away and they disappear. And then you find that you're alone again and you carry on like you were before. But you've got to keep pioneering. Another term for the easy greedy, a better term, is the Germans have got a term called harvest helpers. But another example of harvest helpers, the best example of harvest helpers are Jews. Jews are the ultimate harvest helpers. Now, what is a harvest helper? In German terminology, a harvest helper is when the farmer goes, he plows, he plants, he looks after his crop, and eventually his crop grows and the crop starts flourishing, and then the crop is becoming ripe for harvest. He's done all this hard work, he's put his money in, his effort, his time, and the crop is starting to look good. But he did all the work, he took all the risk. And the Jews are the perfect harvest helpers. And the Jew will rush in and he'll want to help you harvest your crop. So the Germans have got this cynical view of a harvest helper, that you've done all the hard work, you didn't get anything for it, and after you struggled along, suddenly things are showing promise, all your hard work and planning is paying off, all your risk taking is paying off, and then in come these people who suddenly want to help you right at the end. Right at the end, they want a chunk of your harvest. And they did nothing. Jews are the perfect examples of harvest helpers. Jews are not pioneers. They aren't pioneers. You won't find Jews among the pioneers. Jews look for the pioneers to succeed. Then when the pioneers look like they're surviving, they're succeeding, then Jews dive in and they are the harvest helpers. And they start looking to see what they can grab from the other pioneers. They look at the economy that they can dig into, the gold that they can mine, the furs that they can buy and sell, the slaves that they can buy and sell. That's where the Jews come in. But Jews are not the explorers, they're not the pioneers, they don't do the hard stuff, they don't fight the Indians, they don't fight the blacks. Jews are the ultimate harvest helpers. And they won't help these people, but when they see, oh goodness, there's a lot of money, then they are greedy and they want to dive in. And I've seen on the white right, I've seen it among Americans, I've seen it among white Americans, and I've seen it among South Africans. I've seen South Africans also, then they go through phases. Then they are all liberal and they're all staying away from the right wing. Then they watch you, then they see something, then they dive in and they all take part. And then there's money, somebody's got money and he pays for something and they all dive in, and then they get a little bit of heat, boy, and then you see everyone disappear. They're gone in an instant. 99% of them disappear. They suddenly realize that, oh no, this is not easy money and this can backfire on them, and that there's some kind of political heat, and then they fuck off and then they're all gone. Americans are the same. They disappear into the woodwork. And they're all gone and they hide. And then it's the people who are determined, the original old plotters who carry on, and they got to carry on, pick up the pieces, carry on, despite the fact that we have good days and bad days, we still got to carry on. And so you got to understand that to be a pioneer is not easy, it's not fun, it's not pleasurable, the reward isn't instantaneous. But probably that monument in the bottom right is the best example of how the pioneers are seen much, much later. That monument is to people who lived more than 200 years ago. They are now seen for the brave heroes and heroines that they were. The people with foresight, the people who were the risk takers, the people who laid the foundations for something great that they would never get to see. Not even their grandchildren, not even their great-grandchildren would truly get to see this in its most splendid form. Maybe their grandchildren might see some of it, but their children certainly would not see anything. And you need to see what we are doing on the internet in this age of technology in this way. And you must find your place. There are plenty of things everybody can do. There's plenty that you can do as a pioneer. And you and I will be dead. Maybe your children will even be dead. And one day, somewhere on some continent, or maybe on multiple continents in multiple cities, they'll put up monuments like this. And on those monuments will be names like George Lincoln Rockwell, Tom Metzger, Dr. William Pierce, etc., etc. That will happen long after you're dead. But we need to carry on. We must believe in what we believe in, because our stuff is about long-term survival. It's about a new way. It's a deeper thing. We are looking at big changes in the way we live, the way we think. We're a formal people. We don't just do things. We like to think before we do things. That is why we have to convert people. We have to tell people, listen, this and this and this is the benefit of that. If you do this, then we can do that. That's how we solve that problem. This is the thing that will protect us against that enemy. That is how we will deal with the other enemy, etc., etc. These are the things that we have to tell people about. We have to convince them. If we don't do these things, then our people won't understand. The blacks in Southern Africa had to go through a similar process. In their case, they believed in Jewish communism. They believed that Jewish communism was going to save them. And so they had to fool each other into believing what was going to be the benefit. In our case, we know what we're dealing with. We know what the reality is. We know what benefits we will be able to get. And we need to try and tell people. Like I say, Hitler was the greatest example of what can come. And all the others of us, the idiots of us who were on the wrong side, we need to make up for lost time and get back to where the Germans were. And to undo all those Jewish lies, all that historical crap, etc. We've got to fight the culture war, the spiritual war, all the different mental wars that you have to fight against the Jews so that people will listen to you. All these nasty, difficult things. And the pioneers have to do it with very little resources and a lot of determination. They've got to make up for their lack of resources with determination, will, creativity, etc. Another name I've not mentioned, Ben Klassen. The late, great Ben Klassen of the Church of Creativity. Matt Hale. One day there will be a monument to Matt Hale too. And lots of other people. So that's how you need to view things. And just because you can't see where it's going to go and you can't envisage that it can win, you mustn't let that get you down. You need to study more closely, because I will do my best to try and show you the benefits, etc., but you also need to be aware and you need to think long term. And you need to realize that people can and will be changed and that you can be a part of that process. Help to spread things. Do your bit. Find your place. You can contribute. You can contribute. Find your place and contribute. I'm warning you that the age of the internet is such a shocking event that it will go down in history. I'll tell you the importance of the internet. It's going to be like the Renaissance. The Renaissance 500 years ago, when we rediscovered the ancient Roman and Greek science, and that science led to all the marvelous physics and engineering that is our modern incredible science. The age of the internet is going to be like that. It's going to have an effect, but its effect is mental. Its effect is more to do with how it's going to change the way we think and the way we live. It is a tool that can bring about white unity and the sharing of white knowledge in a way that nothing else can. But unlike the Renaissance, which can take 500 years to get us into space, the internet in its current form could easily have its greatest effects within 50 years of the founding of the internet. In other words, by the 2040s. In less than a century, the internet will have changed everything in the world. It has already massively changed things, but it's not reached its zenith yet. The internet might be the age of the grand arising of the common man. That may be what the internet does. That it's the great empowerment of the common people and the reorganization of the common people on a global scale, over and above the other technical benefits like the robotics and the software. Let's call it the super software that exists and that will come. The super software being things like artificial intelligence, but things beyond even that. So don't be droll, don't be miserable, don't be depressed. Our race always moves forward, always moves forward. We always build, and we always build on top of what we've built. And then on top of that, we build some more. So see us for the pioneers that we are, and get stuck in. Don't worry about the Indian attacks, the Jews attacking, the Jewish harassment, the Jews trying to ambush us, Jews trying to kill us, Jews trying to put us in jail. Don't let any of that crap get you down. See it like the same thing as the Indian attacks, the Zulu attacks. They know they're going down, and they're trying to stop the pioneers. They are trying to stop them, and there will be other battles of Blood River that will be fought, and our race will keep moving forward, because we do keep moving forward all the time. We never go backwards. So do the utmost that you can with the technology and the skills that you have and our limited stuff. Just keep hammering away. And like I say, you might have special skills that you can use that can help to speed things up and move things along further. You too can play a role. Because I'm a computer programmer, from early on, I was fascinated by my technical skills and what my technical skills could do and the edge my technical skills could give me. I realized very early on that through my technical skills alone, I should be able to survive censorship. That was what I believed in the beginning. I didn't expect it to be easy, but I expected to be able to survive hacking, censorship, etc. And even so, there were many times when I thought, it looks like I'm losing. But I came back time and time again. And if it wasn't for my technical skills and understanding how it could help me, I would have given up more easily. But I knew that I had an edge, and I've used that edge to this day. So you too have a role to play, and figure out your role. Learn skills, do things, and don't worry about the fact that you and I don't have a jet aircraft that we can drink champagne on like Trump and all the others. We're not going to have any of that. But we are laying a foundation, a real foundation that's going to save people's lives. There are going to be many happy families. Many wonderful, wonderful things will come from the things that we've built. But if we don't do it, and if we give up, then there's going to be nothing. Imagine if the American pioneers gave up on America and they quit and they went back to England and Europe. Imagine if the Dutch, German, French voortrekkers of South Africa packed up and went back to France, Germany, and Holland. Where would we be now? We would never have done anything in South Africa. And all these other countries, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, all of those are the results of pioneers and colonization. Europe itself is the result of colonization that took place 40,000 years ago. So, you know, it's an important thing. And if you don't do it, then the whole race loses out. But if you do it, you survive in the face of the Indian Zulu Jewish attacks, you will probably not be able to conceive of the insane awesomeness that's going to come. And in the same way that everybody wanted to become a Nazi, once Hitler and the other guys had gone through the blood, sweat and tears, so too one day people will jump up and everybody will look at us and they'll say, oh man, you know, wasn't Dr. William Pierce wise? Wasn't Ben Klassen amazing? Didn't Tom Metzger talk so much sense? Why were the people so stupid? And it'll look so obvious to them, but at the time, it's not that obvious. And it's up to small groups of people to fight, claw, and dig their way forward and to win. So we're in a time where victory doesn't appear certain, and even if survival seems sort of certain, great victory seems impossible. Don't you believe that? Don't you believe that? I've studied my history. I know what's possible. I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't believe that this could result in huge changes. There are no shortcuts. There are no easy paths. This is the only way. Just keep on working away on people. Keep on working on our people. You will see. We might yet see wonderful, amazing, shocking things, the likes of which you couldn't even conceive. Take even these retarded blacks. Look even at a guy like Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela's people took about 75 years before they eventually got to power. It took them 75 years, and they were a majority, and they had huge amounts of the world on their side, and they had the Jews on their side, and the Soviet Union. Even so, it took them like about 75 or so years to get to power. It took them a long, long time, decades and decades. Mandela himself spent 27 years in jail. So he was a pioneer for his people. We have hardly been going long here on the internet. We've only been on the internet for 20 years. It's peanuts, man. It's peanuts. We're looking at the future of the world, the future of our civilization. The time period that we've spent on this is nothing. We have by no means been beaten. And we've had to take on billionaires. We've had to face all kinds of people who've come at us. Enemies who've been trying to spy on us, undermine us, cut off our money, break our spirits, demoralize us, turn the one against the other, etc., etc. It's no different to the Indian attacks. So, see us for what we are, see our situation for what it is, and just roll up your sleeves, get stuck in, do what you can do, and you'll see. When you've done it for long enough, like I have, you'll start to see some of your own effects, and you'll realize that like everything else in life, if it's worth having, it's worth working for. And work is the only way. Anything that's important is worth working for, it's worth fighting for, and its end results will be fantastic. So just roll up your sleeves, get stuck in. Don't worry too much about all the stuff that comes at us. That's all par for the course. All major change involves conflict as well. That alone should show you we're on the right track. We're pissing people off, we're pissing the billionaires off, the Jews are freaking out. It's a good sign. It's a good sign. We're on the right path. We're riling up the Indians, we're riling up the Zulus. We're pissing them off, and we're going to win.
And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites, thank the whites.